For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly. Today, it's Yeswe the Cameo at Sunderland. Controversy rages over political past of Sunderland appointee as world realises David Miliband was working there. While we salute, but not in that way, the Black Cats' new boss and ask, can he get them to rally? Again, not in that way. Elsewhere, there's a full Premier League roundup, all the weekend's winners and losers. They look forward to the Champions League quarter-finals. Europa League action post-tweets in today's Football Weekly. Hi everybody, very special Easter pod today, Easter Bank Holiday, but the Guardian pod humming as ever. Barry Glendenning there at the controls.
Hello.
Hi Barry.
How are you doing?
Very well. First officer Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Hi Jacob. And also here, teleported up, Greg Ruffley.
Bukowski.
Oh wow.
Hello James, wow. It doesn't matter, I'm Greg, you know.
Greg.
I'm Greg.
You've been called worse.
Yeah.
Yep, that's certainly true. Good. Well, let's talk about it. Sunderland, Barry. Sunderland.
Yeah.
Paolo Di Canio. What's your gut reaction? Are you happy, unhappy, shocked, dismayed, startled, excited?
Surprised and pleased, excited, yeah.
Are you pleased and excited?
Oh, it's going to make things.
Are you allowed to be pleased and excited? Because of, you know, his background.
Well, I think his background has been sort of exaggerated a bit. He's not some fascist, racist buffoon. It's sort of nuanced, his politics. He gets a lot of stick for having praised Mussolini in his autobiography. But the quote that's often thrown in his face is generally taken out of context. He was quite critical of Mussolini.
That quote, his actions were often vile, but all this was motivated by a higher purpose. He was basically a very principled individual, but he turned against his sense of right and wrong. He compromised his ethics.
And yeah. The recipe for tiramisu.
Yeah.
So.
You know, Sunderland have been just sort of shuffling along like zombies in The Walking Dead for the last 10 months or so, and I don't think it's conceivable they could do any worse under a new manager. And Di Canio's been very successful in the only managerial job he's ever had, so it's going to be interesting, exciting times ahead.
Crazy stat from Gabriele Marcotti this morning, which is that during his time at Swindon, which when he went there was a club that was pretty much set up for disaster, but when he took that job, in the period that he was there with the Robins, only Sir Alex Ferguson had more wins than he did. Remarkable.
I imagine the reason they've gone for him is because this TV deal next year means that Sunderland stand to gain a lot of money if they stay up. They're going with a 2.5-year deal. Hmm. If he turns out to be a mess after these 7 games, but he keeps them up this season, I suppose it doesn't really matter to them. They've got somebody who's going to come in and rattle a sabre and kind of, you know, bang skulls together and maybe, you know, get them excited, which is what they haven't been under Martin O'Neill, I presume. So, you know, this is probably why he's gone for him. And it is a gamble, but, I mean, I suppose Ellis Short's a hedge fund manager, so he's used to that, I suppose.
Right, nice angle. Jacob?
I think he's quite sharp, Di Canio, if you read the autobiography and listen to what he says. You know, that interview that was in The Independent about 2 years ago comes across as someone who's very switched on, but you do wonder how that massive ego is going to play in the Premier League. I think you look at what he did sometimes at Swindon with the guy who he hauled off after 20 minutes, the goalkeeper, and the fight that he had with the player, Leon Clark, on the pitch and on the touchline.
Players up the bum the whole time.
Yeah, I think you could probably get away with that more with a League 2 and League 1 club, which is what he was being at. But are you going to get away with that with bigger egos in the Premier League? I'm not so sure if that's going to fly so much.
I think he's smart enough to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he'd have to, I think.
It's going to be interesting in football terms. The whole background thing, whether it's been exaggerated or not, I mean, it's been a huge part of the story, and David Miliband's resignation was an extraordinary note on Sunday evening.
Well, Miliband's a clown, and he's taken a job in America anyway, so he wasn't going to be. I'm sure Sunderland will struggle on without his input as whatever it was, honorary chairman or whatever the hell he did there, director.
The one thing that you can't get out of your mind, though, is that I saw it today. I went to the photocopier and there's a picture of Di Canio doing his fascist salute.
Right.
You know, and
it's a Roman salute. That's what Gabriele Mercati would have you say. What's the difference, Jimbo? Because I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, what's the difference between what he did and what the Greek player did?
But this is very interesting. Greek players for just, all that, you know. Yeah, he's banned for life from the national. Yeah. So it's because he did what was considered a fascist, and I think what is recognised and is universally seen as intended as a fascist salute.
Yeah.
I find this really difficult. I met Di Canio. I think he's a really charming guy, very personable. Explains his position really clearly. And if you ask him about fascism, he'll say, "I'm not a racist. I'm not an idiot," and he doesn't come across as in any way extreme or in any way oppressive in his views. I think maybe that's the key for me. He doesn't seem to be he has beliefs that I don't share, but then that's the whole point about democracy, that that's fine. And as long as he's not oppressing anybody else or suggesting anybody else should be oppressed, then I kind of don't see where we can, you know, necessarily say he's not allowed to share those views, to have those views.
That would be rather fascist, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Telling him what he is and isn't allowed to think.
Right.
Are we kind of saying that, like, Nigel Farage has been appointed Sunderland manager instead of Nick Griffin? Is that where we are? Is that the difference between his nuanced views, between being, you know, is he a little less...
He gets a lot of
right
stick for being racist. He's not racist at all, in any way. But football is supposed to be about entertainment. Sunderland fans have not been entertained in any way in recent months. And for better or worse, they're almost certainly going to be entertained now.
And Ellis Short, he's pumped in $100 million, hasn't he, into Sunderland. I think O'Neill spent about $32 million of that in the time he's been there, which is a lot of money. I mean, he has backed him and he hasn't. I mean, Sunderland have been absolutely diabolical to watch. I just think, I suppose.
There was a point in Saturday's game where De Gea got injured and he was down for about 2 or 3 minutes, but he thought it doesn't really matter if he gets up because Sunderland had basically a 10-minute spell where they put in a lot of crosses in the second half and it just headed away.
Right.
And De Canio was going to have
one shot on target, didn't he?
Which was Conor Wickham in the 90th minute, which was just sort of dribbled down De Gea's throat. And it's going to be a huge job for De Canio because with Fletcher out, where are the goals coming from? Danny Graham hasn't scored since a £5 million move from Swansea in January. If he can keep this side up, then he must have something.
Mm. Just one thing, going back to that whole business of the Roman stroke fascist salute and the fact that he's got Dux tattooed on his arm and a Mussolini helmet across his back and all this kind of thing, which sounds completely untenable for people from a lot of backgrounds around Europe. You would grow up thinking that there's no way you can even go there because there's kind of a kind of toxic radioactivity around everybody on that side of the Second World War and the whole kind of period of fascism. But in Italy, for some reason, that just doesn't exist. There's none of that kind of radioactive fallout, that half-life to these figures. You can actually look at them. People grow up looking at the events of the 30s and evaluating it on a kind of case-by-case basis. There's no kind of, this is all completely wrong. They can say, okay, well, Mussolini actually did this, he drained the swamps, he did that, famous thing about trains, etc., etc. Now, for us, the rest of his crimes completely outweigh that and mean that it's almost offensive to even bring up the good points. What Di Canio does and what a lot of Italians do, which for us is difficult to, I think, accept, is go, well, I like this bit and I'm going to celebrate that bit. And it doesn't matter about the rest. That person made a mistake. I'm not making that same mistake as, say, Mussolini did, which for us is really difficult to accept. But culturally, that's something that is acceptable for a lot of Italians. I don't know if that in any way sheds any light on his tattoos. Anyway, as for Martin O'Neill, meanwhile, with the next.
It's difficult to know, really.
Has his fire gone out, Barry, do you think?
I think it has temporarily, although I suspect he would beg to differ in the most emphatic and irritable terms imaginable. This is the first time he's ever been fired, as far as I know. I think he's walked away from a couple of jobs before, but he's never actually been sacked. And I don't know, is it conceivable that maybe the game has passed him by in recent years? I don't know.
I'd say so. I mean, if you ask me what kind of style of football does Martin O'Neill play, I wouldn't really know what to say. I'd just say he normally has teams that have character, and Sunderland didn't have any character.
It was basically get it wide, possibly, to two wingers who aren't particularly good. and cross it
into a striker. Yeah.
Fletcher is, but he's injured, isn't he? So it was basically hope, sort of defend and hope Fletcher scores.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the players, if you look at Sunderland's squad, it's just staggeringly mediocre players.
Does he bear the responsibility for that as well?
Well, he didn't buy too many players, but any of his forays into the transfer market have been less than inspired.
Apart from Stephen Fletcher, possibly.
Well, Stephen Fletcher, I mean, he's the best of a bad lot. He hasn't set the world on fire. He hasn't pulled up at too
Adam
many
Johnson
trees.
Just seemed blowing very hard when he went off on that. He's not fit.
And he cost $10 million, didn't he? I mean, the thing is with Ellis Short, I mean, he's apparently not very happy. He's looking at Newcastle and some of the signings they've made. And I know Newcastle are in trouble, but you've got to say the French players they've bought for, you know, a low price have been a lot better than the ones Sunderland have bought for a lot more money. And I think he's looking over there quite enviously thinking, hang on, why aren't we doing that? You could say that maybe he needs to put in some kind of structure whereby he has a better scouting system, a technical director, therefore if he sacks managers and brings new ones in, they can coach them. He's probably, you know, he's looked at Martin O'Neill, giving him a lot of, you know, trust, and he hasn't bought very good players. And now Steve Bruce made some bad buys as well. So maybe he ought to think beyond this Di Canio kind of revolution thing, then, you know, to put in some other structure at Sunderland.
Until this, they seem to sort of had the same manager after one after the other.
Yeah.
Keane, Bruce, O'Neill, you kind of all seem to be
authoritarian.
Yeah,
type.
Be the same, who just buy sort of tried and trusted Premier League players, really, who pass their best and not offering a lot. Mm.
Right. Well, Di Canio representing a sea change then in a very real sense. Can he keep them up in the top division? The situation at the bottom, very fluid. Of course, West Ham possibly just out of it. We'll talk more about their West Brom win perhaps a bit later on. You've got Southampton, Stoke and Norwich City, who are all 4 points clear of the drop. Newcastle, 3 points clear. Sunderland now, 1 point clear. And Wigan and Aston Villa, both on 30 points. Wigan just outside the bottom three on the goal difference. And QPR, who are going to play Monday evening at Fulham, and Reading, bottom of the table. Those two are 7 points from safety. Wigan, coming up fast.
It's March.
Right.
Or it's April.
Right.
Yeah. It's Wigan. And they've got a game in hand as well. They've got Stoke. They've got QPR away. That'll be a really big game for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Jacob said, they did this last year. Martinez gets his team to kind of tootle on through the season. 10 games to go. Oh, you know, here we go.
Off we go.
Start playing some football then.
Yeah.
And Coney's playing very well for him up front. Mm. Real handful.
Good stuff.
Is this... I can never decide, is this good management on Martinez's part or bad management? Why doesn't he get them playing earlier? Why does he leave it so late?
They do lose players every year because they finish the season well and, you know, bigger teams come in and maybe buy some of the players like they did with Victor Moses, and then he has to replace them with, you know, other bargain buys who take time to get going and then, you know, perhaps do eventually. That's the only thing I can think of anyway.
Yeah, fair point.
Mm. I think it's quite fun this way, isn't it?
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Terrific. Of course, unless you're one of their relegation rivals. Southampton, are they now out of trouble with that terrific win against Chelsea?
Almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
How about that Ricky Lambert free kick, eh?
It was good, but it wasn't quite in the corner, was it?
You played check with it. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was a little bit slow getting across. it wasn't quite there, was
you're
it?
You're a tough crowd, Jacob Steinberg. You're just spoilt by that Andy Carroll magnificence.
That was a good goal.
That was a good goal, wasn't it? There were some terrific goals this weekend. But anyway,
Lambert's done really well. That's 14th goal of the season.
Right.
In 31 games. So he's been 1-2 through League One, Championship and the Premier League, which is a pretty good record. And he's 31 years old now. It's not like he's a spring chicken.
Right.
And the other player who's been really, really good for Southampton is Jay Rodriguez. He's been fantastic in the last 4 or 5 matches.
Right. Is it two places they're all fighting over now? Because Reading with Nigel Adkins, we have to work through the process of winning a game of football. with him now bringing his own special philosophy to the Royals.
Is that what he said?
Many, many times, apparently.
He said many things, didn't he?
Mm.
Some other weird things that he said.
Yeah.
But they're going down there.
Did he recite any poetry?
Sadly not, unless that was in itself some kind of free-form jazz style.
Smiley faces all over the dressing room.
No.
He does like buzzwords, reaching out and...
See, that's a pointless...
Blue sky thinking.
Yeah. That Reading appointment was just pointless, wasn't it? Like, Dermot for
so far it is, yes.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you look at the Sunderland one, what we've been talking about, I mean, there's something... You've brought in a different man to the one you had before, but it just seems like he's just put his McDermott suit on and sat.
That's why Di Canio is exciting, isn't it?
Well, it's just something that he's unknown. I'm sure Ellis Short hasn't got a clue what kind of football he plays or tactics or anything, but he just thinks, well, he's going to go around and
light some fire,
rattle some cages, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But someone described the appointment of Nigel Adkins to me as they've basically just got Brian McDermott with hair.
Mm.
So,
yeah, very possibly. Villa, what about them? Their defeat against Liverpool. How serious will that prove? They're back in the bottom three now.
It was slightly unfortunate. They played very well in the first half, I thought. And going forward, they can score goals. And Wyman and Agbonlahor and Benteke particularly are a handful for a lot of sides. But, you know, you thought, you know, they have this under control, although Suarez was having a lot of chances. And then to concede 2 minutes and straight away into the second half and, you know, they kind of collapsed a little bit for that period, didn't they?
They really should have got a point out of that game, because Suarez, as much as he was causing trouble, he didn't have his shooting boots on yesterday. He had a lot of chances and missed them. But they paid for naivety at the back again, because like everyone in the world knows if Suarez gets the ball near the touchline in the penalty area, he's going to very quickly cut back inside and try and get a shot or a cross away. Apart from Nathan Baker, he was the one man in the world who didn't know that and just cleaned him out. And it's like, there's a very young defender there, who's 21, who kind of should have been more switched on to know what he was going to do and not commit himself like that. And he's paid for at times this season. I remember it was Baker who got turned by Anichibi against Everton very easily and really kind of showed his his youthful inexperience. And that has cost Villa and countless times this season. Like Jacob said, going forward, they're a very good team, and if they were, you know, half as good at the back, they wouldn't be in any kind of trouble at all. But they are, because of the defensive inexperience.
All right. Well, now it's dangerous to do, because QPR are playing Monday evening against Fulham, and were they to win that, it might change things a lot. But with them and Reading 7 points from safety, you kind of think those two are going down. If we're going to battling their way out of trouble again, who's going to be the other team going down, Jacob?
If O'Neill had stayed, then I'd be saying Sunderland.
But he didn't.
But no. So, but they've got some tough games coming up, haven't they? So.
Yes, they have.
Chelsea, Everton. Newcastle, Everton. Yeah.
They finish at Spurs. Yeah. Some other games.
I think it'll be Newcastle or Sunderland, one or the other.
Newcastle or Sunderland?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Probably Sunderland, but...
Still?
Who knows? Di Canio might give them the jump start they need. I mean, the thing about his Swindon side is they were incredibly fit, probably fitter than any other team in League One and possibly any other team in the country. But he's not going to be able to work on Sunderland players' fitness, really, between now and the end of the season, is he?
So. Interesting point. Greg?
I'm looking at Norwich there and Stoke as well, and the two other teams, a bit like Sunderland have been, that are just like, there's just this inertia around them. There's nothing happening at those clubs. They're not playing particularly good football. They're not on an upward trajectory or anything, and they could get pulled into it. But I do think there'll be a battle. Obviously, it'll be a battle between Wigan and Sunderland there as well. I don't know. I have no idea. I think Norwich might get dragged into it.
Well, is Stoke on the same number of points as Norwich? Yeah, that would break a lot of hearts. Well, they do.
Excellent.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing what happens with QPR at Craven Cottage Monday evening. Right now, though, a spell of music and then into Europe. Woof.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, scientists unravel the genetic causes of prostate, breast and ovarian cancer by Ian Sample. The voice. Will.i.am looks like an action figure of himself, and Tom Jones is Zeus, by Charlie Brooker. To subscribe for free to the Guardian Audio Edition, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian or find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Audioboo. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
That was nice. Now, there's a shiny cream egg here for the pod contributor who makes the best show of it. In the next half hour or so, Barry?
Yeah.
Producer Ben's contributed that.
Producer Ben has gifted us one cream egg.
One cream egg.
Between the four of us here in the studio and Sid on the phone.
Yeah.
One cream egg.
All right.
And you can't share a cream egg.
He did give us a penknife, though, didn't he?
Yeah. He did, yeah.
That's for the worst pop member.
Oh, dear. Hey, Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, Sid. Exciting news.
Can I have a cream egg?
Sorry?
Can I have a cream egg?
Well, it's probably years since you had one. You're probably stuck there with some kind of...
You don't get them here. It's a tragedy.
What do you get?
Well, you just kind of get different chocolates. You don't get Easter eggs in quite the same way, and you certainly don't get Cadbury's ones.
Although, like, deep-fried Easter eggs or something, are they with bacon?
Mostly what you get, by the way, and this is a seamless segue.
Yeah.
Mostly what you get is huge, great, big 2-ton floats of the Virgin Mary being dragged through the streets.
Oh, yeah.
Including this weekend by the Real Zaragoza manager.
Oh, really?
So he was bearing a terrible load this week in more ways than one.
Well, he certainly was. He certainly was. Did you have a good weekend, Sid?
Did I or did he?
You.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was one of those weekends in Spain where it felt like a kind of a round of games in which basically nothing of consequence happened. And it was, you sort of sit there, well, at least I do anyway, maybe I'm different to other people. I sat there on Sunday night thinking, oh, God, nothing's happened.
Hmm. All right, well, stand by.
So let's talk about that nothing.
No, stand by.
What a way to set it up, eh?
Plenty's going to happen this week, though, Sid, as... Barcelona.
And that's one of the reasons why nothing happened this weekend, by the way.
Oh, right. It's because of the Champions League?
Yeah, I just think Madrid and Barcelona couldn't be bothered.
All right. And what about Malaga? They're involved too with that big game against Dortmund. Where are we going to start, Sid? Is it going to be with Paris Saint-Germain hosting Barcelona Tuesday night in Paris? The Qatari derby, they're calling it.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, but Barcelona have travelled off this morning and Tito Villanova is with them, which I suppose, at least in human terms, is the most interesting story surrounding that. Of course, there's also the small issue of Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
There is the small issue of Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Thiago Motta and others.
Yeah, everyone's forgotten about him, actually.
Yeah. And not we haven't, Sid. We haven't. What are the Spanish feel? Of course, it was Paris Saint-Germain who knocked Valencia out in the last round. How concerned are the Catalan press about this game?
It's very difficult to judge that. I think that the reality is that both Madrid and Barcelona came out of the draw feeling reasonably satisfied and feeling like they'd got reasonably good draws. And with the possible exception of playing Malaga, I think they felt that Galatasaray and Paris Saint-Germain were probably the easiest, maybe I should put that in speech marks, easiest two teams left in the competition. So there's a certain degree of confidence. I think there's a little bit of irritation about Zlatan getting off his ban for the first game. And certainly there's some concern about him as well, not least because he's 8 foot tall and all of the Barcelona team are about 3 foot tall. And without Puyol, you've got Mascherano at centre-back, which means really and truly the only person who's any good in the air at all is Piqué. I think there is a little bit of concern, but there's a belief that the draw has been okay for Barcelona and that they should get through, but that it won't necessarily be easy.
Paris Saint-Germain have only been in the quarterfinals once before, so did you know that? 1995.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, 95.
Yeah, do you know who they beat?
Barcelona.
And this time they've got a DVD from Mourinho showing them how to do it.
I'm not sure if they have, though.
Ah.
Because I took Karanka, and I'd love to know, actually, the truth. Because I took Karanka described it as ridiculous. What he didn't do is describe it as not true.
Ah. The story being, anyway, that Moose sent Ancelotti a DVD saying, do me a favour, knock these chumps out of Europe.
Well, I sent him the story. I wonder if the DVD was preambled with that. That would be great, wouldn't it? Hey, Ancelotti, I'm going to send you a DVD of how to beat Barcelona at the start. A little personal message that says, help me, Ancelotti, you're my only hope. He's not going to be out of Europe. A little hologram of Mourinho.
Yeah.
That'd be brilliant.
Anyway, Sid, so yeah, you're not sure if it's true, but it's a terrific story.
Well, I mean, Karanka said it was ridiculous. Karanka, right. Of course, being Mourinho's assistant coach, he said it was ridiculous. He didn't necessarily say it was untrue. I suppose on an informal level, it's perfectly plausible.
All right. Well, anyway, as you mentioned, Jordi Alba's back from his injury. Well, Puyol's out. Tito Villanova back on the sidelines. Is it the Barcelona of the 4-0 against Milan, or is there a danger we might still see the team that lost against Milan and Celtic?
I don't think we'll see the team that lost against Milan in the sense that was a team that lacked edge, lacked aggressiveness, and I think they've learned the lesson from that. But I think we're unlikely, certainly away from home, to see the side that beat Milan at the Camp Nou, because Barcelona's away form in the Champions League, and it's going back 3 or 4 years now. It's not just this season. Hasn't always been particularly brilliant. So I don't think it'll be quite as quick as that. They're without Pedro, by the way, who's injured anyway, but would have been suspended even if he wasn't injured. And it looks like they may well play Christian Teo up front. So I think we'll see a Barcelona side that are far more serious and aggressive than Milan, but I can't see them going there and winning 4-0.
All right, OK. Interesting. What do you see them do? You care to venture a prediction?
I don't know. I find Paris Saint-Germain such a weird team.
Yeah.
In that they seem to me to sort of almost not be a team. They almost play 4 at the back, 4 up front, and 2 men desperately trying to fill the gap in the middle.
Yeah.
But I think they can cause Barcelona problems, particularly from set plays. If you look at the height of Zlatan against some of that back four, you look at the Barcelona's occasional vulnerability. But if Barcelona can keep the ball away from them and prevent them from being able to play up to the what's effectively a front four, then Barcelona are certainly a favourite. I can see a draw in this one, and then of course if Barcelona score in that, they'll consider that a pretty good result.
Absolutely. All right, well, moving along, any truth in the rumours that Guardiola has sent Fatih Terim a DVD of how to beat Real Madrid?
The rumours that you've just started.
That's right.
Yes, James, they're true. You would never start a rumour that was false, especially not on a day like today.
If he did send, if he did send a DVD saying how to beat Real Madrid, would it not include the words, go all out for it and really attack them, which is what Galatasaray say they're going to do?
Yeah, on the face of it at least, you don't really, it's not, unless you're a really, really good side, it's not necessarily a good idea to open up and really go for Madrid. Although I suppose the temptation is to say, well, maybe it is if you think you're a good side. Maybe the reason why teams have got decent results against Madrid sitting back and playing deep and playing on the break this year is because generally speaking, they're teams that assimilate the fact that they're not as good as Real Madrid and therefore they have to play a different way. But then, you know, we've seen it with Barcelona. I think to some extent Barcelona's style slightly plays into Real Madrid's hands. So it'd be very interesting to see how Fatih Terim approaches this, whether they do go all out, whether they do play effectively all three of their attacking players, you know, whether they go for Burak and Drogba and Schneider all in the side, or whether they try and protect themselves a little bit more. I don't know, because as you say, they've talked about, most of Galatasaray's players and so on have talked about saying, well, we'll be faithful to our style, whatever that style is, because there's a certain degree of variety within it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so a quick word on Malaga then, a big clash of the dark horses there. They need a good performance at home because Dortmund are very scary back at their place. Do you think Malaga can keep going in their debut Champions League competition?
Well, I was going to say that the draw was kind to them when they got a Porto, except that in a way it wasn't, because considering they'd won the group, that was maybe about as hard of the second place teams, considering they couldn't play Spanish sides, that they could have got. And having lost the first game, probably didn't expect them to get through, but they did. I was watching Malaga this weekend. I went to see them at Rayo Vallecano. They were in Madrid, and listening to Manuel Pellegrini talk after the game, he was quite interesting, because he implied, he didn't quite say it, but he implied quite heavily, I think, that the first game is about not letting the other team score as much as it is about trying to get a victory. So I think they may be quite cautious in this first game. And if you look at the way that Villarreal played with Pellegrini when they got to the semi-final as debutants, the furthest a debutant has ever got, this is, I think I'm right in saying, this is his second debutant team. They're in the quarterfinals already. And there was a similarity then. They were quite cautious. I mean, they're quite nice to watch and they keep the ball well and so on, but they're quite cautious with it. And I think they might be a little in the first leg here as well, that they might think to themselves, right, the most important thing is that we don't concede. Mm. And by the way, Dortmund, I really, really like them. I think they're a really good side.
Mm. All right, Sid. Well, it looks like being a terrific midweek. Enjoy your Spanish Easter delicacies, and we'll catch up with you on Thursday.
Yeah, if you could send that cream egg through the post, that'd be great.
I don't think you've earned it, Sid.
I was just going to say,
What do I have to do to earn it?
Well, it's for whoever makes the best contribution to today's pod, and I think...
Oh, that's me. You've completely screwed.
No chance on that stuttering, poor performance.
That's true. Mind you, I can leave it to you to screw your chances between now and then.
Maybe
just not coming on. The best chance of winning it is just don't come on at all. Don't say anything.
What's
and
Rafa's
let everybody
address?
Else relegate themselves.
Yeah. Okay, super. Sid, enjoy. We'll be back on Thursday.
Okie dokie. Speak to you then.
Galatasaray, can they spring a surprise, Barry? What do you think?
No.
Okay. Paris Saint-Germain and Barca?
I think Barca will win that tie.
All right.
Comfortably.
And the Malaga-Dortmund?
I would like to think Malaga will go through, but I suspect they won't.
Dortmund haven't been playing as well as... I mean, people have seen them in the Champions League and they've been very good, but this season in the league they've struggled and they've conceded quite a lot of goals. I mean, they're 20 points behind Bayern Munich now, and I know Bayern Munich have been far and away the best team in Germany, but I think Malaga have got a chance against Dortmund.
Yeah, well, they've done well at home as well, haven't they, Jacob, Malaga?
Yeah, unbeaten.
There you go.
So Dortmund.
Good stuff. They won all their group games there, didn't they? Until the one that didn't matter.
Yeah.
They were already qualified and they drew with Milan at the end, yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. And Paris Saint-Germain? There's a potential there for an almighty upset there.
Would it be an almighty upset?
I think it would.
Almighty?
Maybe not almighty, for a large, medium to large size upset.
They've got a lot of good players, though.
Paris Saint-Germain, yeah. They certainly have.
But I think that'll be a draw, score draw.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. So all this talk of a cream egg being up for grabs has led to Rafa Honigstein calling in. Rafa!
It's James, hello.
Hello, it's true. There is one cream egg available for the best contributor to today's pod. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling lucky.
All right.
Confident.
Confident.
Yes.
All right. Like Bayern Munich, perhaps, as they go into their big clash with Juventus, Bayern only won 9-2 against Hamburg. I have to say, if you're going to make mincemeat of any team, Rafa...
Yes.
Yeah. That would be the one to do it against. Hang on, though. Didn't you say that this kind of scoreline didn't ever happen in the Bundesliga?
I relish the pun.
Oh, but, you're in a pickle now, my friend.
It is true. That kind of scoreline was very unusual until very recently. However, Hamburg has now conceded 20 goals in the last three games in Munich. So whenever they turn up, it's certainly becoming a bit of a pattern. Of course, the funniest thing maybe of all after this game was that Matthias Sammer, the forever dour sporting director, made an earnest point of saying, well, it's all good, but we conceded again from two corners, and this shall not be.
Right.
And we must really improve against Juventus. So you see that people even find big hairs in that kind of soup.
Yeah. Well, but hairs in the soup, is it? Hair in the egg in Italy. What would be the equivalent English phrase to that one?
Spanner in the works, fly in the ointment.
Fly in the ointment, I think, isn't it? Yeah. And there's another one about chips, which we won't go into. okay. But extraordinary day, though, there at the Allianz Arena, as the goals flew in.
It was extraordinary for a number of reasons. First of all, Dortmund, who kicked off earlier at Stuttgart, won their game, so Bayern could not win the title against Hamburg. And everyone expected Bayern sort of in typical, stereotypical fashion just to turn up and maybe with one and a half eyes on Juve just play out a 1-0 win or maybe even a draw because they couldn't be bothered. And Hank has rested a few players as well. So it came as a big surprise, I think, to Hamburg and everyone concerned that they really turned it on. And I think the instrumental man on the pitch was Claudio Pizarro. I think he was only on his third start in the Bundesliga. He's a veteran. But he was given the nod as a striker, and he scored four goals and assisted in two more. No Bundesliga player has ever done that. No Bundesliga player in the history has ever had a direct input in six goals. But it was that kind of game. And also, Ian Robin looked good. But there's a good chance that both won't be playing against Juventus.
Raf, didn't Bayern do this last season when they was at the quarterfinals of the Champions League? I remember them winning a Bundesliga game like 7-0, and then they went and put seven past Ball, didn't he, in the very next game, something?
Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, the Basel game was very one-sided. I don't expect Juventus to be that kind of opposition on Tuesday night. In fact, that they have tremendous respect for Juventus, and everyone's talking about keeping a clean sheet, and maybe perhaps there were even one or two players who said that, you know, 0-0 might be a good result for us. So I think that they don't expect a game anywhere near the one they've had against Hamburg, simply because there are many unknowns. You know, Juventus play with a formation that's very unusual in the Bundesliga. No one plays like that anymore. And, of course, you have that, even though most players will deny it, you have that thing with the Italians, where a lot of these players played for Germany in the Euros. They were very confident, but Italy found the resources to beat them, and they're worried that history might repeat itself.
Mm. To what extent does that shaky performance against Arsenal still trouble them?
I think it might have been a problem if they'd continued in a similar fashion domestically, but because they've won everything and haven't really suffered any ill effects, and now on the back of this performance, I think if anything it'll serve as a wake-up call. And I think it was a very unique game in the sense that Bayern started the game 3-1 up away from home, so effectively made it almost a 3-0 up, and they played accordingly, and they never really kind of found the right approach. And I think this is going to be very, very different. I think this is going to be on a knife edge from the first moment. They know any mistake can be fatal, and I think it's going to be a really fascinating game, easily the pick of the tie, because I think if you look at all the other quarterfinal matchups, they all look like very lopsided, with one clear favourite. Whereas with this one, I think it's more or less 50-50.
Jacob, where's your money lying on this one?
Juventus.
Really? Why?
I don't know. I just found that performance by Bayern in the last round to be a little bit uninspiring. And I kind of agree with what Rafa said about the Germans and the Italians. I've got a funny feeling for Juventus, and they just seem so, as you put it, clinical and cynical.
Yeah, absolutely. Barry?
Even though there's a cream egg up for grabs, I can't call this one.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't know. And I know that's going to affect my chances of getting that.
I don't particularly like cream eggs, but I'm going to go Bayern. Anyway. Yeah, no, I just think this time...
Bayern in the first leg or to go through?
To go through, yeah. I just think they've got experience at this end of the tournament. And they've been playing very well this season. They've been scoring a lot of goals. And
Experience of failing in big games at home at this stage of the tournament. All right, interesting. Rafa, that's fantastic. So, a quick word on Dortmund's chances away to Malaga.
Well, their chances are pretty good, although they really suffered yet another couple of injuries at Stuttgart. Marcel Schmelzer broke his nose. It was standing in all different directions. And Sven Bender had a gash on his foot. I don't think Bender will be able to play. Schmelzer will be one of those mask jobs, touch and go, 50-50 at this stage. But they're looking good. I think going forward and defensively, they have just a little bit more than Malaga, who are very exciting. And because the first leg is at home, I think it also gives them a bit of a cushion. They can even lose there, 2-1, still probably be in a strong position. So I'd really fancy Dortmund to go through.
All right, Rafa. Well, the good news is you'll be with us on Thursday, so there might just be a shiny little confection of sugary, syrupy goodness awaiting you then.
I certainly hope so.
All right, Rafa. Sorry about that. See you then.
See ya.
I can't believe you called him Sid. That's like shouting out some other woman's name when you're having sex with
your
wife.
Very like, isn't it? Okay, now, the exciting news is it's not just Champions League this midweek, because also there's a little something for the Premier League teams as well. They call it the Europa League. Three sides involved, Jacob. I know you're all over. You're all up in this Europa League business, aren't you? What's lighting your fire? Is it Chelsea with their 7 games in 19 days fixture pile up, entertaining Ruben Kazan at Stamford Bridge?
Well, no one knows what kind of team they're going to put out, do they?
Right.
But Chelsea, they're playing today.
Yep.
Obviously, we'll know the result by this time.
Yeah.
By the time this pod comes out, but they lost on. They lost on Saturday to Southampton, and they haven't actually been very good in the Europa League so far. They were pretty lucky to get through against Stauer or Stoyer, we don't know yet. And Sparta Prague as well, needed late goals in both games.
Right.
And so I think Rafa seems to be more interested, though, in winning the cups than getting the top four at the moment.
He's just gone rogue, and he's just thought, I'm not going to be here next season. I don't care about the Champions League. I'm going to win an FA Cup and a Euro pot. And
Rafa goes rogue.
Off. Yeah.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
Well, doesn't win me the cream egg, though.
I didn't see Southampton, Chelsea. Were Southampton very good or were Chelsea terrible?
A bit of both, I think.
Yeah, Southampton were very good again. Similar performances to the one against Liverpool and City, just really high energy kind of pressing game and really good passing.
All right. Well, Spurs are in action. They are against Basel. Looks like an easy game. Is it interesting how this may or may not affect the race for fourth? Because the race for fourth has really closed up, hasn't it, now? You've got Spurs, who are just 2 points ahead of Chelsea, and Arsenal just 2 points behind Chelsea now. Spurs have played a game more than the other two.
That's the Christian Kroos derby, Tottenham v Basel.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Hopefully he'll be there. With his cheap ticket and everything.
Very much so.
Jan Vertonghen can't stop scoring for Spurs at the moment as well. As much as Bale's scoring every week, Jan Vertonghen's just kind of knocking him in. And he's been a good signing for Spurs.
Four goals in 5 games.
Yeah, and he created Bale's goal. Created his goal.
Was that the goal of the weekend?
That was kind of scary.
Morales was really good as well.
Another Belgian effort. An interesting stat that there have been more Belgian goals than any other than from any other nation in the Premier League this season, apart from England and Spain. 54 goals by Belgian players. How about those Belgians, huh? What was your goal of the weekend, Barry?
I didn't really see much football over the weekend. Grant McCann penalty for Peterborough against Cardiff City.
Right.
Fantastic.
You're going to say Andy Carroll, aren't you?
No, Bale.
Really, Bale better than the Andy Carroll? The Andy Carroll's pretty special goal, though.
It was very good, but That Bale one was, you know, it's a little bit like Messi, wasn't it?
Where yeah.
It was
just... No one else could move the leg fast enough, yeah. I don't think.
That I think it falls into that category, yeah. Which I think is, you were saying, of the goals that you've never seen anything quite like that before.
Well, it was like a millisecond before he let it go, and he got such power in it as well. So, yeah. I don't know, maybe it was just a really good toe poke.
Yeah. Moment of the weekend had to be there's a Malumbu getting sent off against that. I saw that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's so pointless.
Talk us through it, Jacob.
94th minute, you're 3-1 down. You've got the ball in your own half. You go past Gary O'Neill, sir, and Gary O'Neill's the slightest tug back on his shirt. Referee gives a free kick, and Malumbu's not happy with that. He picks up the ball and boots it up to Gary O'Neill from behind.
As hard as possible.
As hard as possible, and then gets sent off, and then a 22-man ruck breaks out. Why? I don't know. Maybe something was said or something, but winding them up, it was just ridiculous. I don't know what was going through his mind. The red mist descended.
Yeah, big win anyway. Big win for West Ham.
It's probably safe now.
Right, okay. Anyway, we were talking about the Europa League, and of course, Newcastle, who are possibly not safe, eh, after all that. They got a bit of a European fixture on their hands as they travel to Benfica, the big Portuguese leaders.
Yeah, and Newcastle might struggle with that one, I think. Yeah, Benfica haven't lost all year in Portugal, but then neither have Porto as well. Mm. So, yeah, they've conceded 15 goals all season, so Newcastle have to be at the best to score past them.
Right, Newcastle don't concede in Europe either, do they? They went to Angie Mashkashkala.
I don't think they've...
Makachkala.
Yeah. I don't know if they've not faced a team as good as they're going to meet in Benfica, though, I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah.
They've had 4 wins out of 4 in the Europa League, but they're only in it because they got knocked out of the Champions League, so they can't be all that. Barry? Yep, all right. Kiss that, Krivni. Bye. Right, okay. Super. Hey, how about a post or two? Here's Grun. He can't stop posting in, this fella. He was the one who pointed out that Clarence Seedorf was only trying to get on with his game and mind his own business when the referee told him to get off because he'd been subbed, and then when he didn't go, he gave him a yellow card. That story about the red card for Clarence Seedorf. Now he says that Seedorf picked up a card for telling the referee he was acting like a clown. The Brazilian FA is charging Clarence, which is quite ironic that he's saying the referee was a clown. Yeah, charging him with unethical behaviour, and he faces a maximum punishment of 12 matches.
This is for the sending off?
Apparently so. He'll be managing Sunderland next to this game. extraordinary. Toby80 says, I've just finished watching what must be the game of the season. Torino 3, Napoli 5. This was an amazing game. Amazing. Joyful stuff, says Toby80. Surely deserves a segment. I didn't see it, unfortunately. I can't really talk about it. But it looked amazing.
I've never stopped you before.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know, Tunbridge Wells got to the final of the FA Vars this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Only the second team ever from what the Kent League to get to Wembley.
What was the score?
They lost 3-2 to Shildon, but they won 4-3 on aggregate.
Mm.
So they now face Spennymoor, who are from the Northern League, which is above them, at Wembley.
Right, what's their nickname, Tunbridge Wells?
I have no idea. I just know my wife's from Tunbridge Wells, so
right.
Ticked off.
Dad was happy.
What are you saying, Barry?
Ticked off Tunbridge Wells, isn't that the classic,
yeah.
You know?
Disgusted, isn't it?
Angry, yeah, disgusted.
Disgusted of
Producer
Wells.
Ben's here to tell you that it's the Kents, although I...
The Kents, what?
Yeah.
Is he swearing? What?
I think that might be
yeah.
Producer Ben's point.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, in other Serie A news, though, that win for Napoli away at Torino means they stay second. It's all pretty much sorted at the top in Italy because Juve are 9 points clear. They won the Derby of Italy this weekend, 2-1 over Inter. They're 9 points clear of Napoli, who in second place. Milan are third with a 6-point buffer over Fiorentina, so the Rossoneri set to take that third Champions League spot.
There's not much excitement in the European leagues, is there really?
No. Funnily enough, the last of the major European leagues to have a bit of a title race on was France, where Lyon were 5 points behind Paris Saint-Germain coming into this weekend, but they lost yesterday against Sochaux, the extraordinary Sochaux, who were struggling away down at the bottom of the table, but yet have beaten all of the top four. They're very much the French Wigan, if you like, just, you know, to put it in Premier League terms. So that means now that OM are in second place, and I think they're 7 points behind Paris Saint-Germain. I don't think anyone sees that one coming back. Portugal, though, Greg.
Yeah, Portugal, there's excitement there because Benfica and Porto have both gone unbeaten all season. Porto have just drawn a few more games than Benfica, and I think they both got to meet before the end of the season still as well. Last time they met, they drew, so they didn't lose again. So that'll be a really interesting game when they do play.
Well, all right. Good knowledge, Greg. Meanwhile, in Holland, where you often get kind of 12 teams tied together on the last day of the season, what's the situation there, Producer Ben? Ajax are top. PSV and Vitesse Arnhem are tied together 3 points behind them, with Feyenoord, is it? Just a point further back, so that is tight. Eredivisie, how about that? In Scotland, though, it's all over. Rangers have won the third division.
Yeah, they're sort of ascension back to the top table of Scottish football has begun in earnest.
And what a table it is.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
I think that's Ali McCoy's first trophy as a manager.
Oh, how nice. Of course, if reports are to be believed, they might be heading to more than just the top table of Scottish football. They might be heading to the second football of English football. Did you see these reports that David Cameron supposedly is in high-level talks, to get the big two into, get them some, you know, what is it, to just slotting straight into the championship in England? Have you seen this?
In high-level talks with who?
I'm not sure, Barry.
Michael Gove, or?
What has David Cameron got to do with
it? Well, you may ask, because he sees the inclusion of the big two Scottish sides in English football as a major ploy to win hearts and minds ahead of a referendum on Scottish independence. Huh?
Right.
Do you want that if you're Scottish? Do you want that if you're a Celtic and Rangers fan? Do you want to see your team?
Well, that's another question.
Do they? Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
All right. And then you think, well, I don't want to be independent anymore because my team plays over there.
Yeah, well, that's going to work, yeah.
Yeah. That's the feeling.
He's a genius.
Is it David Cameron we're talking about still?
Yeah.
Anyway, on which note, we come to the end of today's podcast, but not before revealing the most important result of the day. Producer Ben, who gets the shiny cream egg? You, the listener? My word, it's true. It's true, and you've earned it. Two Pot Boy on Thursday will be here. Have to say as well, there's also a little something special coming your way on Friday. Isn't there, Barry?
So I believe, yes.
Yep, something special on Friday. That's all we're saying for now. But in the meantime, many thanks, Greg Ruffley. Oh, done it again.
Hey.
To producer Ben, Jacob Steinberg, Barry Glendenning. Happy Easter, everyone. Speak to you soon.